Hello, and welcome to Crit Club, the podcast where four friends watch movies from the Criterion Channel streaming service that none of them have seen before. I'm your host, Angela, and with me as always is Wizard.
Oh, hello, it's me, it's Wizard.
Corey.
Hello, I'm Corey.
And Peter.
Oh, hello, it's me, I'm Peter.
Oh, friends. This week, we're watching that guy who did The Celebration, a.k.a. Thomas Vinterberg, follow up his masterpiece of a film, The Celebration, with 2003's All About Love, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Claire Danes as a divorcing couple on a version of planet Earth that is enduring strange phenomena, with people flying and all freshwater freezing, people collapse dead out of nowhere, and people just step over them, you know, like it's normal. Somewhere in this is supposed to be a love story between an internationally renowned ice skater played by Danes and her husband who does We Don't Know. This film is not officially...
He's an academic of some kind?
He teaches. Calgary's waiting for him to teach.
Yeah, right?
I have the job interview of my life in Calgary.
This film is not officially in the Criterion Collection and is featured on the channel this month for reasons that we might try to understand in this show. You'll want to know why I chose this film, and it's because I trusted the Criterion Channel. I associate Criterion with a certain level of quality, and so when I say that the director of The Celebration had another film and that it was sci-fi in nature, I thought to myself, hey, that sounds like it could be worth watching. But should I ever trust the Criterion Channel ever again? Will we ever take a Criterion Channel recommendation at face value? We'll find out. Who wants to go first? I think I'm going to nominate Peter. What did you think of this film?
Yes, I was going to raise my hand.
Tell us all about it. How much you loved this movie.
There comes a time, my friends, my dear friends. Every now and then.
Here we go.
Every so often. Every brief moment. Every once in a while, we are given a gift that is so full of absolute wrong-headed decisions and bizarre choices and bewildering construction that I'm left a little speechless, which is surprising because I was fucking wheezing the entire time I was watching this movie. I personally, no aspersions on anyone, I personally thought this was absolute fucking dog shit in just about every goddamn fucking way that a movie could be. I deeply, deeply, deeply hated this experience on so many levels, but also thought it was like hilarious. I mean, the list of things that flew through my head, my notes are very long as I'm like trying to understand this. The first one probably kind of sums up a lot of my whole thinking about it, because for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes, I'm like, oh, I guess Joaquin Phoenix is doing an accent.
Ah, and then I was
the ADR is like kind of weird. He's definitely dubbed. Am I sure that's his voice?
Oh.
And so for 10 minutes, I was like, did I just watch a different sort of version of this? Do I have an audio track off? Until an actor that I knew, like she spoke and I knew her voice. And I was like, oh, no. This is just a terrible choice.
Yeah, it's just...
bewilderingly unnecessary fucking choice that is being made upon this. Is being thrust upon
is
this.
Is it Danish?
Polish.
No, because I think he's supposed to be Polish.
Yeah. Polish, you're right. Polish. But like, in addition to the accent, everyone is so stilted as to appear inhuman. Not just the clones. Everybody is doing like some weird Men in Black. We can't even... Sorry,
it's way too early for clones.
I'm so sorry. I'm still not... Like, I think I want to sum up, because I don't want to go too long on this, because I do have lots of notes about it. It, like, the one movie it reminded me of more than anything else is something I'm pretty, like, I don't know if a lot of people have seen, but, like, fucking listeners, come at me and come to my aid if anybody else here has seen Richard Kelly's Southland Tales.
No, yeah, like, that's what I was going to say.
Yes!
You're stealing my thunder here.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm not going to go too into it. That makes me so fucking excited, Corey. I'm not going to go too into it. Like, I think there was some part of this where I was like, you kind of got to give it to, like, big swings, you know? Like, but I absolutely, dear listeners, dear friends, am not going to give it to this fucking movie.
No, you can't. I was going to question you on that.
And I will end on Sean Penn being in this movie at all.
Yeah, that's right.
This was a fucking bewildering goddamn gift. I wheezed throughout it, and I thought it was a breathtaking blunder of filmmaking. And that's my time.
Peter, I'm so thrilled to be able to share this experience with you.
I'm like, hey, you know how I get angry at movies?
Oh, yeah.
There's like one or two things I'm angry about. I'm excited about how I'm feeling like positive dopamine about how much I dislike this movie.
Ooh.
But yes, that's me. That's me.
Wizard, tell me about your experience with It's All About Love. Were you feeling the love?
Well, you know, I feel like I'm going to come around. I feel like I'm going to come around on this and end up not hating it as much as everyone else is going to hate it. This is a bewildering and at times like completely boring and uninteresting movie. I'm pretty good about my phone. This was one of the, I could tell that like my ADHD is acting up and I'm like, I'm not this movie. We reject this movie. but having said that, there are parts of it that I thought were cool. I liked some of the weird dreaminess of it. I did not like any of the performances because everyone is so remote. And listeners, it's an audio medium, but Peter Allen Clark is losing his mind.
I'm so sorry because I can't believe I didn't mention that so much fucking hinges on ice skating.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Why is it ice skating?
Because the world is cold and remote. And it is getting colder and remoter.
Oh my God,
which
you found meaning in this wizard.
Was that? What do you mean? It's like, it's a movie that tells you this is what this movie is about.
Yes.
It does. And so this movie's from 2003. Is that correct? 2003?
Yes. Yes.
Bad time for this movie to be released. One thing that I did walk away from this, even though it is ridiculous, the clones are stupid, the accents are dumb. Sean Penn, who just spent the movie flying in a plane, and then the end of the movie is, oh, I guess I'll die. So there's some striking images. I liked the stuff about like the weird gravitational anomalies in Uganda. I liked that the movie is like, there's, you know, in the world of this movie, there's like a non-specific problem in Africa, I guess, because it's always like, what I did like about the movie, what I did take away is that it is trying to say something about like the chilliness and remoteness of the time in which we live. I think that whatever semblance of a point this movie has speaks really well to the time that we're living in now, much, much more than the time in which it was released. But I don't think that this movie is saying all that much because, like, again, like, characters are so remote as to seem inhuman, and the plot is bewildering, and it's too dreamlike. It's too dreamlike, but not surreal enough to like to like make you go, ooh. Like, even something as crazy as the clones is dealt with in this like very like uninteresting way. I don't know. I tried to find like an upshot, like something to enjoy about the movie. I like that they freeze to death together. That's romantic. That's all about love.
I haven't seen so much romance since the Titanic.
This movie is not about love. I don't know what it's about, but anyways, yeah, I don't know. It was something. I did not have a great time. Corey, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is a thing. No, I had the exact same thought about Southland Tales, where so you also didn't mention that this was, you know, this was his follow-up to The Celebration, which I absolutely loved. I gave it a 19. I loved that movie. And then it took him 5 years to make this movie. Ingmar Bergman had reached out to Ingmar Bergman to say like, hey, I'm languishing on this project. Can you like help me out here? And Ingmar Bergman basically like laughed in his face and, you know, said, you know, you've dug your own grave and stuff. But he basically said like, you spent too long, going to the next thing basically. And so, I immediately like drew parallels with Donnie Darko, which also, you know, I think Donnie Darko is an absolute masterpiece. Don't watch the extended cut because it kind of ruins the mystique of it. And then once you make a movie like that, it's like, what do you do? Like, how do you move on from making this masterpiece? Well, you get a bunch of big stars because you have a lot of cachet now, and you go weirdly weird sci-fi that barely has a story and doesn't make much sense. I have watched a couple of like long form YouTube videos on Southland Tales that are sort of apologetic about it and sort of make a lot of more sense about the world. And there's a whole like comic book series and stuff that he's created to like flesh out a lot of stuff or whatever. So,
I'm a Southland Tales defender.
Okay.
I think that movie, 51% of that movie is like kind of gets to me and I kind of love it. I also think 49% of it is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, but I think it's a fascinating movie, but I think I'm a defender of Southland Tales. Well, this was not Southland Tales.
Yeah.
Sorry, but it reminded me of it.
This is far worse, reminded me of it. Isn't it?
Well, I think maybe the thing is flipped. Like, I think 51% of this is terrible and 49% of it is
It's not
like,
even okay.
Not for me.
Not even okay.
No, not for me.
I was kind of on the wizard boat with this where I was not cracking up laughing. Like, I love watching bad movies that are so bad they make me crack up. But what I don't like is watching just boring movies that just fucking lose me.
This is an emotionless movie. There's nothing to laugh at.
Yeah, I didn't really find anything to laugh at either. And it's not dreamlike enough to be a dreamy movie. It's just more just like odd and strange and just full of just bewildering choices. I mean, I feel for Thomas Vinterberg. Like, I can sort of understand like the anxiety and getting like stuck in a quagmire of a creative project that you just can't see to fruition. You feel something in your heart, but you can't make your brain, your words, your fingers type out the words of the feeling. I understand. I've been there, man. I know what that's like. But unfortunately, like, I don't have like millions of dollars in a studio backing me and have a product that is just going to be around for the rest of your life.
Need another round of edits, buddy.
Yeah, not a good movie. I didn't, but at the end of the day, this is not like a critical fail for me. This is not a horrible movie in my book. I just think it's not great. Anyway, Angela, you seem to have opinions on it. What are your opinions?
Oh, boy. I feel really sorry for Claire Danes and Joaquin Phoenix because I'm just imagining them like hearing about doing this film and being like, yeah, this guy's the new hot shit. You know, he did this masterpiece of a film. Everyone wants to work with him. And then you end up with this. And none of it makes sense. And not even in the charming way that David Lynch is able to make it make sense. I had a lot of questions, which I will share with all of you because I never take notes on these films. but I had enough time because I was so bored by this movie that I have questions. I'm like, one, how did this script get greenlit? Because I don't know that it was a script. Like, did everything on this film actually get shot, or was this a pastiche of things that he was able to afford to get shot and he just tried to make a movie from it? The desperation of a person, of a kid who has forgotten to do his homework but still has to turn it in, drips from every frame.
I think a lot of pages are just two characters share a look. Next page.
But he spent a long time on this, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he spent 5 years on it. I don't think this was just, like, off the cuff.
No.
I think it was more overthought than it is underthought.
But the...
Or at least the first half was overthought, because...
It's a mad dash to the finish.
The last 30 minutes are just...
I also want to know who wears tuxes to the ice capades.
I laughed at that. I have the list too of all of the things I fucking laughed at. I laughed at so many things.
Ice Capade, she's an internationally famous figure skater sensation.
Ashley, it's so funny because I literally did write down tux to the ice capades.
I'm like, why are people flying in Kenya? And who is the cinematographer? Because, like, it makes me think that it wasn't the director of the celebration who actually made the celebration a good movie. It had to be the cinematographer. And I haven't actually dug into that rabbit hole to find out, like, is it the same person? But it just feels like a totally different movie by completely different crews. It's like one movie.
Well, it's not Dogma.
It's not Dogma. That is it. Then
didn't get the certification.
The other question was, what is that accent? Next question, has the director been watching too many David Lynch movies? What does David Lynch think of this movie?
Because there's a lot of Polish in Lindenberg as well.
That's true.
Like, yeah,
I
do wonder actually if that movie we've also seen on the show, Inland Empire, if this was like a reaction to It's All About Love, like, hey, dude, this is how you do it.
This is how you do it. Right?
Is Poland an especially surreal place?
I looked at a couple of reviews. I looked at a couple of reviews, and one of the reviews said something along the lines of it felt like a talentless David Lynch.
Yeah, that's a good... Although, that's the thing. You can tell how hard these actors are trying. They're like, I'm a professional, and I'm going to give it my all. And even though things were stilted, like... I felt like people were still making an effort. And Claire Danes, like, actually, out of all of them, tried her damnedest. Yeah. And then I was also curious, what are the things that the movie gets wrong about the year 2021? Because this is set in a film in a year that we are 3 years beyond now. However, interestingly, in 2021, we were still in the throes of an international crisis of COVID. So is this film actually prescient ahead of its time? Will hundreds of years from now people come to appreciate it more? But fundamentally, I hated this movie. But I love that it's taught me how not to be ashamed or embarrassed by picking a movie that is terrible. Because it used to really bother me. Like, I know that we have a rule where nobody judges, but like, I have this inherent pride where I want to show people a good time. And so I'd be kind of like,
I have that same
inner
thought,
devastation. Yeah. And this time I've gotten over it because I was laughing by the end of it. It was just so bad, but not like, of course, it more just like in the incredulity, or I couldn't believe just how bad it was. So I just kept laughing. But I would like to apologize humbly to you all and to our listeners for picking this movie.
I am fucking delighted to have watched this movie. It makes me so excited. Like, there is a righteousness whenever because art, you know, there's no right or wrong. And so I can have the emotions I have about it and it feels great. And the righteousness I feel when I'm like, I hate that so much. It's like, good. This is a nice feeling. So you gave me a gift.
Oh, thank you. But I am sure there is much to discuss. I don't know that it's really worthwhile to break this down plot point by plot point. But I think it might be worthwhile to talk about just how poorly this movie starts off in terms of grounding people in a setting and making you care about the characters. It just drops you in this weird place and with horrible dialogue. Like, there is no real setup for you to launch on. It's just all a bunch of little pieces that just never come together. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, it was also, like, I was so thrown by the bad audio quality and, like, the dubbing and, like, what was going on. It felt like, I don't know, the production from the beginning. And then it started on such a note, and sorry to skip to the end with this, but like the goal of the opening is to serve with divorce papers so they cannot be apart. And then that turns, but at the end, the family is like, you need to be away from, but they were also trying to stop him from having the divorce papers about it. I don't know.
Are they trying to stop him?
Because
they like having him around.
At the beginning, and like that woman who's in The Leftovers, who I think is a fantastic actor, but not here, was like, don't give her those papers. It's fine, you know. But then, like, you know, a hot 45 minutes later, they're all gathered around, like, you won't be welcome here anymore. It's like, this could have been, if you all just fucking done this and hidden the clones, this would have been fine. Like,
clones, let's just.
You want to talk about
Corey?
The clones?
Yeah. I'm so curious about like what you all like found redeeming about it.
Are they clones? Like they're because I thought there was like dialogue in there that was saying that like they were other women.
Introduced as other because they like openly are like here are three clones or three women who look exactly like Claire Danes.
There was dialogue in there that was like saying that they were like they had started as other women, but then I guess they got made into looking like Claire Danes or something. I don't know.
Well, just to give some context to our audience who probably has not, and for their own well-being, has not seen this film. At some point, the Claire Danes character, who is an ice skater, internationally renowned ice skater, she encounters these lookalikes who kind of scream at her and do weird things. And then all of a sudden it comes out that they're trying to replace her because she actually wants to retire and have a life and not be an internationally renowned ice skater. Does that sound right,
or
guys?
She has a congenital heart disease that might kill her anyway.
Yeah, she might be dying.
I would like to, like, Angela, I think you were right. I want to ground this conversation and the listeners as well, because also what we're learning is he's going to divorce but at the airport, there was a dead man at the bottom of the escalator, and they step over him.
Just step over.
I was into that. I was totally into that. I was like,
Corey,
Stuff like that in the first 10 minutes of a film, like, and it's fine because you're setting the world. And it's like, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, we just live in a world where there's dead bodies around, but they don't do anything with it.
Well, no, I was into it as well for 20 seconds, 10 seconds until they step over the body and they say it starts at the heart when people are feeling sad and lonely.
Yeah,
immediately they give this heavy-handed exposition. We're like, fuck all of this.
The world
is
getting colder, people.
That's true.
It's getting colder.
The world is getting colder. Dead people are just around that people are stepping over. And also... this gravitational distortion or whatever in Uganda, which blanket, maybe I'll come back and say later, it really bugged me, especially towards 100%. The end and the last thing. I felt it was enormously othering and enormously just like kind of
really
fucked up.
It was almost, it was inverse horrible things happening that have happened in the United States that so horrible that I can't even say the word.
Yeah. Yeah, so just to set the conversation for like the world that we are entering in with this movie, it's like all those things. Sorry, I'll stop.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're on a roll.
And ice skating. This is the thing that
how
made
much
me
money
laugh
is there
the
in ice
most.
Skating?
So much.
Like, this is the thing that made me laugh the I kept coming back. I was like, fucking clones to make sure that the ice skating can keep happening. Like, they're following her around and kidnapping her because of ice skating.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a world where it's like, hey, listeners, y'all, my friends, I can get on board with silly, surreal fucking shit. I love it. I eat it up. But I could not connect with this ice skating being.
So let's go on with the clones situation here where, you know, essentially there are these clones that are being created so that Elena can retire. Corey, you don't think that they're actually clones?
I thought that there was some sort of dialogue about them being like other women that were brought over or something like that, that were then shifted to make to look like her because they all had different personalities and stuff like that. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day. The technicalities
it kind of doesn't like the clone stuff doesn't matter all that much. Like nothing in the movie matters, which is very frustrating. Like
especially when people start getting shot. And you're just like, whoa.
Sure, yeah.
How did you enter this world, Wizard? Were you interested in the dead man on the escalator and the gravitational disturbance in Uganda?
So I am always down for like a dream-like adventure with heavy-handed metaphor and symbolism. I am down for that. One of my favorite films is The Holy Mountain. I've mentioned it on the show many times. Yeah. Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain is one of the fucking most ridiculous, heavy-handed movies of all time. I don't mind when a movie wears its like thesis on its sleeve. So yeah, okay, people are dying of isolation or broken hearts or whatever. Fine, that's cool. But these things exist. Again, like these things exist in this world, but it doesn't really matter. Like, no one seems affected by any of this stuff. Our point of contact in this movie, in this world, again, are two people who are so remote. We're supposed to believe that they, like, that they love each other. But I think ultimately this is a movie about people. This is a movie about two people who don't want to die alone, which is also fine, which is also totally fine.
Sure.
And a totally fine thing to kind of, I'm sure there's lots of movies about the end of the world where you're like, I just want to be with somebody. I don't know. This world is dumb and I don't know why ice skating and,
I gotta say at the beginning I liked John and what's her name, I don't remember.
Elena
yeah.
God,
John,
they said everyone's fucking name all the time.
I liked their relationship in this. I liked the vibe that they had together. I think in a lot of movies, especially if you're coming on act one, we're getting a divorce, they were just both behaving in like a mature like non-dramatic way around each other and stuff. And I don't know. This movie had me in the first act, I want to say. So.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And so I was like, oh, okay. Because, I mean, like, you know, a lot of movies could just start throwing conflict and you're bickering and, like, going to get into, like, the, you know, nitty-gritty, dirty details of why they're, you know, getting
divorced.
That's
what I was waiting for. I felt a little let down. Yeah. I was like, give me the juice here.
It just seems like they just sort of fell out of love and, you know, grew apart. And now they're just mature adults, you know, getting a divorce and stuff. And I thought that was just, I don't know, that's an interesting, mature take on it and stuff. But yeah, then throughout the course of this, they just, I don't know, all marriages can be like survived in, if you just go to a seedy hotel and screw for a couple hours.
Speaking of that,
like,
that was the worst sex scene I've ever seen in my life. It was so
the
bad.
Worst
I was,
ever?
Like, really, it just felt weird. It did not feel sexy and not, it was just.
I was watching this with Frida and Frida said, is that how they have sex?
In the future, yes.
You're right.
In the cold future.
Yeah, you gotta be really careful of people's hearts. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that, though, and I don't know why I'm the one defending this movie. I didn't like this movie very much, but, like, you'd mentioned the cinematography at the beginning, Angela, and, I mean, obviously this looks night and day different than, you know, Celebration, but I liked a lot of the cinematography in this. I thought it looked like, I thought it looked like cool. And like a lot of the stuff with the lighting and like the sort of muted cut, like it looked like a Matchbox 20, you know, album cover a lot of times
or
something like that. Like it just, yeah, I don't know. I thought
it struck me as very early 2000s.
Yeah,
with
for
like
sure.
These like steely grays and steely blues. Like I feel like that palette was like pretty popular for a hot second.
It definitely was. And maybe I just have like some nostalgia for it or something like that.
But. I really hated the first shot of that plane in the air because it the quality of it. I was like, am I watching you know when you're in the airplane and they're showing you where the airplane is on your journey? That's what I thought I was looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
all the airplane stuff looked super fake. And it felt super fake. And he's just like he's like talking to him on the phone and at one point he's like, it's so quiet here on the plane. I'm like, have you ever been on a plane? Planes are loud as fuck.
Hey,
all
it's
the time.
2021. It's the future in 2021. Planes are quiet and you can talk on a cell phone.
Right.
And smoke
in
cigarettes.
In the middle of the aisle, making friends off light and right and left, I'm sure. Cinematography. Okay, I'm starting to like think, come up with a cohesive thing about this movie. I don't think it says he did this over a period of 5 years. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, maybe I kind of only did it over 6 months, and I just took the other 4.5 years to kind of fuck around. Like, you don't think that's why this is a sloppy, lazy thing. Like, I'm thinking of specific, like, dialogue of, like, I can only fly. I don't try to fly. I don't want to fly. Like, I've always wanted to be a white bride.
Oh,
I remember that. Oh, you remembered that I wanted to be a white bride. Yes, you could.
I got to be
a
white bride after all.
Fucking movie. Like. Yeah, like, there's just, like, these, like, repeated dialogues and, like, these, like, again, Wizard, I gotta say, I can think of plenty of movies. I love Yodorowsky as well. I don't mind if it's wearing, you know, things like that can win me over.
Sure, yeah.
This is just done so fucking clumsily and sloppily. But it's production-wise, I don't know why this shot like stuck with me. I was trying to figure out what was going on with this shot. It's when I guess they've got to get away to talk for some reason. And so their way to talk is to drive their limos through Central Park and then have their driver go buy cigarettes so they can talk. And I was like, what is the setup and what is the sort of like, what is the writing behind this thing? And I kind of realized that this is just a cheap, loose production budget thing because you never see them actually in Central Park. You just see limos in Central Park. And so they can just shoot whatever limos for like, you know, a hot 30 seconds and like a little backup. And like, that's the scene. They can just shoot it there. It's like sort of pseudo on location. And so like this movie felt like there was a bunch of that shit where there's like B-roll and these things. Like this just fucking sucked. Sorry.
Like, the only shot that I liked in this whole film was toward the end where it shows the brother, or Michael, and Elena and John walking away from each other in the snow. That was, like, the only good shot in the whole film. It sort of reminded me of La Jetée for a minute, but Yeah, everything else was crap. And you know what? What's interesting is that that shot, that shot was the most similar to the way things were shot on the Celebration. Just in terms of like, it seemed handheld. Clearly, they had someone on kind of a mountain looking down, and then they actually pulled back even more, and you could sort of see how that shot was made. Everything else was kind of just weird.
I also laughed so many times, but like the first, the Tux at the Ice Capades, the really extremely unconvincing body double of Claire Danes, and like the every so often shots of like Claire Danes from her, you know, chest
waving her
up,
hands
like,
around,
waving her arms, and only to it. Doubles being like a theme also, like, I think is like pretty meta hilarious in this way.
Corey, I know
I've talked so much. I'm
Corey,
so sorry.
I know you're a big Claire Danes fan, and I was curious as I was watching this, did you get enough Claire Danes in this movie?
Yes. I mean, I think she was working her heart off in this movie. I really do.
She's the best thing about it, but that's not
which is maybe why I don't hate it.
So. See, this is the truth is coming out.
Yeah.
How old was she then?
And yeah. I know that all of her dresses were probably Narciso Rodriguez, because that was her big designer in the early 2000s. Mm. But now...
I mean, I will...
Go ahead. Oh, no. Now all those dresses kind of look like mom dresses, so I kind of feel sad.
I mean, I will admit like that I've had a lifelong like crush 22. On Claire Danes.
So. Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. No, Claire Danes.
Did it start with My So-Called Life?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I am of that generation. That was my... I was in the same grade as they were when that show was airing. Like, that was the perfect demographic.
I was obsessed
with
it because the main character's name was Angela, and she just wanted to dye her hair red. I was like, this is me in a TV show. Having crushes on Jordan Catalano's. Sad. Mm-hmm. Wizard, you're not saying much. Tell
What can we say? Like, you're it's one of those things. Like,
I have a lot to say.
Like, sometimes it's fun to pile on a movie, but like this is one of those movies. Yeah, it's not so bad that it's good. It's just like a bad, boring movie. And the movie kind of announces itself and it says, this is a movie about loneliness, kind of. And you're like, okay, what are you going to say about loneliness? And it's like, well, it's people shouldn't be lonely. We need each other. And you're like, yeah, no, I got you. What do we got? Another hour? Hour and a half? Like, okay, cool. And like, I don't want to be flippant about creative work, but this movie just did not do anything for me. And I didn't hate it because there's enough here for me to go, well, you're a 5 at least. Spoilers.
Whoa, you're so generous. My goodness.
But yeah, I don't know. I was bored. I felt badly for everybody who was just acting their little hearts out in this movie. But like, again, nobody has anything to dig into. Like, we know that they have muddled Polish accents and they love each other, but they have to get divorced because she's an internationally famous ice skating star and he's like a quiet academic type, maybe. And also the world is ending and like none of it seems to matter. There's no stakes to the movie. I don't care if they get together. The world's ending. Mm-hmm. They die together. Cool. Awesome.
I mean, okay, so let's talk about the world. I mean, is it ending?
It's a prequel to Snowpiercer.
I mean, yeah, like so
Piercerverse.
So in one of the sort of most popular like screenwriting books, the Save the Cat, there's this like idea of like multiple mumbo jumbo, and basically it's like writing advice for when you're writing a science fiction or fantasy or whatever. It's like have your one piece of magic, have your one piece of thing that's not a real thing, introduce it early, and then, you know, build your world on that and stuff. And then if you start introducing other things throughout the plot, he calls it multiple mumbo jumbo, where it just gets extremely strange and confusing. And like, this movie is this, like, doing this wrong in spades or whatever. Because I mean, it's like, we got the clones, we got like people dying in the streets of heart failure, we got flying people in Uganda, and then we have a day a year where all the fresh water freezes.
Don't be in the bath. Do not be in the bath or shower. This is very important.
And I mean, what does that say about your blood? Like, aren't we 98% water? I was like, why are we not all just freezing? And then they have this shot of like the whole of New York City.
Basically, there's just like, there's no one single thing in this sci-fi universe for us to hang our hat on. And it just kind of like leaves us guessing. We can't get attached to the world because we don't know what's going to change next. We don't know what the next piece of weird magical stuff that's going to happen in this is. I don't know.
And I do feel like that there's a lot of that.
And this is why I think that it wasn't a rush job. Maybe the dialogue and all that was a rush job, but I think he spent a lot of time thinking about this world. I can see him, not as a non-experienced sci-fi writer, getting really like sucked into this world where things are happening, things are weird, magical things. And I could see myself in that position or whatever, and then just getting like too sucked into that world where you then start missing the actual details of what makes a compelling story, you know, when your world been into it. Again, like Southland Tales.
Well, okay, so I want to check, and Wizard, you have me checking myself, because I definitely would never want to be just like relentlessly shitting on something. Like, it's not.
I don't think that's what we're doing here.
I'm just checking myself. I talk about how much joy I get out of like disliking this, but it's more of like, to me, this is a puzzle. I don't get a sense of like superiority, like dunking on something. Yeah. To me, it's just like, I really like, and like, it's like that limo shot. Like, why is this shot like so kind of oddly staged? What was behind it? Like, figuring that out. And I really enjoy movies and experiences like this to try to be like, what, like, can I even try to guess at the like the reasons for a lot of these choices? Corey, I really agree with you about sort of like not having any sort of world to hang on. And I feel like that was ever present through a lot of it, where there just wasn't enough meat. But also it felt like the characters themselves weren't exactly living in the world that other parts of the script were kind of show us. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, I mean, this is a very specific to me thing. But again, I laughed very loudly when they go on the train and he asks, is this Brooklyn? like, I mean, you know, Joaquin Polish Phoenix may not know because he's just flying in from wherever. But Elena at least has lived there for at least a tiny bit. And she at least knows like the very noticeable geography of New York City.
One would hope.
But still like... Yeah, but still, like, that sort of, like, do you even fucking know where you are? But again,
do we,
like,
as there's... film viewers know where we are, actually, is the question.
But they're so delighted that it's snowing, and then he has to tell us very, very big, like, and it's July! Like,
so,
just for the people in the back row. But it's like, but so that seems so asymmetrical with, like, the doom and the anxiety that's riddled through other parts of this world.
But mm-hmm. what I was taking from that was that these people that we're following are obviously the upper crust. You know, these mm-hmm. are the people who have the money and they have the means to avoid the worst parts of climate catastrophe or anything going on. The worst things that are happening are random people on the streets are dying. Who cares? We're rich. It's not happening to us. The world's freezing, you know, whatever. We have the money to take care of it. People are losing their sense of gravity and flying away. It doesn't matter. It's happening in a poor African country. It's not happening to us. Like, so I think that just, I that's how I was thinking. It's like, yes, this world is falling apart, but like, it's not really going to bother these people because they're going to be fine.
Even when they're trudging at the end through the snow,
well,
trekking,
then,
like,
and then,
like,
yeah, finally it all comes
dad.
Back to mm-hmm. sort of, you know, get them in the end, basically. But I mean, I was taking the sort of flippant, like, oh, wait, look how beautiful it's snowing. Like, whereas people who are like actually going to be, you know, not able to pay their heating bill or whatever when the world's changing like this would be really scared and terrified. These guys are delighted because it doesn't matter because they're going to be fine.
It's fun.
I mean, and that just actually recently happened here in Oregon. We had a week and a half of ice and power outages, mm-hmm. which this region is actually not used to. And there are a lot of people who did not have heat, and it was flipping scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, and I think that that's a trope in a lot of movies. It makes me think of, like, you know, I don't know, Hunger Games or Snowpiercer or whatever. You have these classes of people that, you know, don't have to worry about those sort of worst things in the world. And so, I don't know, that stuff... I was along the ride with on it.
Mm. I like those are the exact type of things that I could be, But yeah.
But they never did anything with it again. Like, they never really did anything with it. They never really got... I mean, their comeuppance is that they end up freezing to death in the middle of nowhere. Because they got off a train in the middle of nowhere for no fucking reason. Why did they get off the plane? Or the train? Why? Everyone's just shaking their
head. I have no idea. At that point, I had stopped caring.
There is no reason.
It just... Nothing makes sense in this world.
Yeah.
So Wizard Angela, you all have not seen Southland Tales, right?
I've seen pieces of it. No, I tried watching it probably during the pandemic and quit very early. I still hang on to this notion where, like, it's a story about how everyone can be a porn star. And I'm like, that's happening now, with far more dignity and grace.
What a fucking insane movie that is. Yeah. I swear to God, watching this movie made me want to watch Southland Tales again.
Me too.
It was like, again, me trying to like understand this movie as a puzzle into itself of like, because I think of Southland Tales, again, I'm a defender. 51% of that movie really worked for me. And I swear to fucking God, it had images and ideas and like shots that like have stuck with me and I think about very often, weirdly, in a weird way. And I was like, what is the... They're both big swings. They're both these like weird imaginary surreal dreamlike worlds. Like, what is it about sort of an execution of like Southland Tales, even though I recognize it's not a good movie, like that still like has me sort of lifted up? I mean, Wizard, The Rock plays a very nervous a very, very nervous, anxiety ridden man. They're trying to use the ocean as a perpetual motion machine.
Ah, of course.
There's a video of two cars fucking. There's a music video with Justin Timberlake.
Ah.
Tara Reid is the porn star. What else is going on? There's some double agent stuff. Sean William Scott.
That one guy from The Princess Bride.
Yeah, exactly.
You're selling it, guys. You're selling it.
But it's like I was like, as I was thinking of this movie, and again, maybe it's unfair to even compare them because I guess they're kind of different movies, but they seem very like spiritually connected. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it was the fact that It's All About Love didn't go hard enough, right?
Yeah.
Like didn't go weird enough in its way.
I think so.
Mm. And it just kind of left a lot, like even if it didn't have anything much to say about it, like committing to all of these different bits and then just kind of not committing to all these different bits, just left the bits just kind of like flapping in the wind.
Mm-hmm. There's also so much about this that takes place in the United States, but it doesn't feel like the United States, or it just feels super weird.
Is this Brooklyn?
Have we said all we have to say?
Is there something to say about the assassination of the clones on the ice skating rink?
I was a little taken by surprise. Like, everyone was so excited about these clones. I still don't know who killed the clones. I don't care.
The Morrison guy.
Yeah.
He likes Claire Danes, so he's like, no, I'm going to kill her clones instead.
Yeah. And, like, the violence against women ramped up weirdly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is what it is.
But I mean, I'll say that we're not alone in not liking this movie. This is critically panned. Claire Danes reportedly burst into tears when she saw the screening of it.
Oh,
so
Claire.
She was like 23. I honestly feel bad for her. Like, she was like, what, 22, 23?
Yeah.
Like, and you're coming on like with this renowned international director coming off of this celebration. Mm-hmm. Like, I honestly feel like she was getting a fucking raw deal.
Oh, yeah. For sure. My question, actually, before we close out, is like, why the fuck is the Criterion Channel showing this? Like,
it's
Vinterberg. I know, but I feel so misled.
Oh, no, it's Vinterberg, and the royalties they have to pay on it are probably pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And to be fair, this month on the Criterion Channel, listeners, you can watch Freddy Got Fingered, starring Tom Green.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
100%.
Where is the marketing team? Okay, Criterion Channel. Okay.
Something to think
from
about.
From one marketing professional to another. You're diluting your brand. This is not good.
I've also watched another like apology video of Freddy Got Fingered talking about how it's actually like, you know, it was very like, we're gonna use this word again, prescient for like the comedy that has come since then or whatever.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I'm sure it's true, but I mean, again, what makes a Criterion movie? Royalties, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Do you all have any theories about Sean Penn of like the reason, like, okay, let me say my piece
the reason
first about
he's
it.
In the film or his yeah, character. I have one. Oh, like, maybe we'll say it
both,
at the same
I
time.
Guess. Both. Like, I mean, my, like, there seemed to be, and again, it really feels like a lot of this was like slapshod put in because apparently, like, obviously he doesn't interact with any characters. Mm-hmm. He probably never met anybody, like maybe an AD actually shot like his scenes or something. But still, like, it felt like thematically the character was written to sort of keep having this idea of flying, like flying kept being with Uganda, with all sorts of stuff. There was just a lot of like floatiness and disconnection. It seemed like a device to hammer home that sort of theme. But I'm curious what you all thought. And it's just like egregiously unnecessary. What the fuck is this?
I think you're giving it more thought than Vinterberg did. But
I believe. I mean,
the
world
had to have
is
some
getting
thought.
Colder.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's Sean Penn. I mean, it's like you're not costing nothing to put Sean Penn in your movie. Like, there's some thought had to go into
it.
Right?
Actually, I think Sean Penn felt sorry for Mr. Vinterberg and was like, here, let me do you a solid. I'm just going to do this little thing for you. We'll just, it'll add a little something. But also, I think it was way too soon. I know he was having marriage problems, even in the early 2000s. So, you know, just pocket some extra money for that divorce.
Dishy. Oh my goodness.
Marin County, early 2000s, baby.
Did anyone see Tree of Life? The beautiful movie, God,
no.
I forget the director's name.
Terrence Malick.
They did Badlands.
Oh, Terrence Malick, yeah. Right.
Oh, yeah,
Terrence
yeah.
Malick, Tree of Life. I love Tree of Life very dearly. I feel it's a pretentious movie, and I'm a sucker for pretension. But it cracked me up in this movie that, like, because Tree of Life also has Sean Penn not interacting with any other characters, also just kind of like looking around dazedly. Like it just seemed like two identical roles. And that's all I'm going to say.
Sean Penn works best with Sean Penn. It's a documented fact.
Let me make sure there's nothing else I'm wanted to laugh at.
I will say while we're in a brief pause, I want to correct myself. The reviewer said that it was like Kubrick with a talentectomy, not David Lynch. So.
Huh.
Gotcha.
Sure. Yeah.
But look, we've survived this questionably, you know, poor movie that was promoted by Criterion Channel.
Don't forget to check out Freddy Got Fingered on the Criterion Channel.
So I think we're ready to roll and give you our ratings. Before we do, a little explanation. Here at Crit Club, we give a rating from 1 to 20 in honor of the Dungeons & Dragons tabletop role-playing game tool called the D20, 20-sided die. There is nothing else on the show that is related to Dungeons & Dragons or role-play gaming,
sometimes.
I hear complaints about. Like, every week I hear a complaint from someone. Like, yeah, guys, there's nothing here about Dungeons & Dragons. But here, friends, this is the time if you want your D&D flavor. And so I'm going to go with Peter first and find out what you're rolling.
I'm just laughing at my notes because sometime, like, while during all the clone stuff and, like, the escape to Brooklyn and all of sort of stuff, because there's a real big, long 30 minutes where you just don't see Sean Penn on the plane. And I wrote, lol, Sean Penn, where are you?
Put that on a shirt.
Two.
Oh,
two. Giving this an absolute, wow. Absolute two. Yeah.
Man.
I wonder what would have made it a one.
Oh.
I mean, well, I did think about it. And the only one I've given is to Belladonna of Sadness. And this wasn't as bad as Belladonna of Sadness. But it's fucking close. I don't know,
like, Peter. Peter, you have until the end of the show to change your mind.
I do, but I kind of came in to this recording with like two on my mind, and just like, let's see if it goes up from there. And I'm sorry, it did not. Two.
Wizard, what you rolling?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not a great. Not a great picture, everybody. I'm gonna say, what did I say? It's at least
a
five.
You said a six, and I think that's just.
You said at least a five.
So
at
generous.
Least a five. I'm gonna say I'll stick with that. It's still a five.
Wow.
I didn't hate
There's
it.
There's no way I'm gonna be the highest rated. I'm gonna be the highest rated.
Oh my god, are you serious?
Do it.
I thought, you guys are dashing my dreams. I thought this was going to be a milestone show where we would have an across the board failure of ones.
No. I mean, it was close.
I don't know what it is. I know what it is. It's Claire Danes. But
that's what it is.
Other than that, I just also just, I don't know, I identified with the quagmire that he had found himself in writing this and stuff. And at the end of the day, his quagmire is better than any quagmire that I've ever produced. So,
Corey, I think that's such a valuable and valid perspective. And I'm really glad to have you speak to that, because I think that's enormously interesting.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to give it a 7.
Hey,
hell yeah.
Still not a good movie.
Oh my God, people. Guys, you're so kind.
Angela, what are you rolling?
Oh, it's clear. This is getting a fail, a total number one, mainly because I would have given it a 2, except that I feel betrayed by the Criterion Channel. And so.
Freddy got fingered.
And so I have sympathy, but because my kind cohorts here have expressed that sympathy, I feel even more encouraged to give it that one to fully represent the failure at which this film delivered on cinematic storytelling in every way, shape, and form. The cinematography the camera was almost never positioned in a place to add meaning to any given shot. None of the shots created a sense of tension for storytelling. The screenplay dialogue was the nicest thing you can say about it was that it was stilted. I would say this is a film that doesn't actually tell a story. And there are films that don't tell stories that are far more interesting than this.
The music was also terrible.
Oh, so terrible. Chris, my husband, though, however, he's like, what are you watching? I'm like, you don't want to know. And he's like, yeah, but this is a Donizetti piece. It's beautiful. And I'm like, the music is far better and not meant for this film, and probably used because it was royalty free.
Is this a 1? Should I give it a
1?
Come
on,
Peter.
Get on the one train. Come on, they desecrated the city that you live in.
I don't think
if this were a 1 to 10, I would absolutely give this a 1. Yeah. But on a 1 to 20 scale.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
That's acceptable.
And I also I don't think one. You don't have to compare it to hating it as much as Belladonna of Sadness.
No,
it's more of it's a line that you cross. Yeah. Does it cross the line into being a critical fail?
Is it?
God, it kind of fucking does.
Come on, man! I just gave you a whole litany of reasons why this is a bad film. Okay, wait. I will tell you why you need to give this a 1, and it's the depiction of the Ugandans. Bottom line.
I mean,
it's
so
disgusting. Actually,
fucking
like
weird.
So clueless.
Yeah, it really
this
was
is European
disgusting.
Cluelessness.
we'll return to this by the end of the episode, I will reveal.
Okay.
Keep listening, listeners,
while
for
we're
the reveal
waiting,
of my true score.
While we're waiting, allow me to remind you all that you can get a hold of us. Or do we? What do we do? Do we talk about reaching us or talk about our next show? I always forget.
Talk about reaching us, or I don't know.
My brain hurts.
Go for it. Do we have any letters this week?
Oh, I haven't checked, actually. But if you want to message us, you can email us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. Oh, hey, check it out. We have an email today from Mr. Sean Kahn. This is the first time I'm reading it, so I will read it to you all. Salutations, Critical Club, to follow up on the Sean conversation point regarding Gabriel Burns and End of Days. That italicized sounds like something I would interject with. Sadly, I do not remember dropping some sick Gabriel Burns. What I do remember is seeing End of Days with friends at River Free, parentheses, a cinema in a long since dead mall where management gave no fucks about people walking in without paying admission. Mm-hmm. I remember two things about seeing End of Days. One, it was painfully regrettable. Two, how it revealed the devil was behind the movie's plot machinations. One character taking the year 1999 and turning it upside down to reveal Gasp.
That's right. That's right.
Plus one. So,
devil's
you know,
out there.
Listeners, Sean Kahn is another listener, and, you know, he sends and stuff from time to time, but he has more to say on Gothic, which was last week's movie, and he has this to share. He loved Thomas Dolby's non sequitur synthy score, mostly because it was so bizarre. I imagine Dolby in the corner somewhere in his vast villa hanging out with that goat rocking the score whilst everyone else was tripping their balls out. I feel like there was a missed opportunity with the eyeball nips. Her eyes should have been replaced with nips. And she should have said, look down here, when he couldn't stop staring at her nippled face.
Look down here.
Sean Conn.
My eyes are down here.
Yeah, my eyes are down here. That's funny. Sean Conn, do you maybe have the potential here for some screenwriting? You've got time. You should Gothic pursue too. That. He says also that he liked the movie for all the weird, trippy visuals, but he could not take the character seriously. And at no point did it feel like the depicted events, how they actually happened on that fateful night. Well, I don't think we were watching a documentary, Sean Conn. Maybe it's hard for me to put these historical literary figures in a real life context. It feels like I was watching some theater kids do a recreation of what happened. Perhaps romantics were in this melodramatic in real life. They would be in real life for him. They would be more cerebral. But what the fuck does he know? He asks himself in this letter. He finally says he could see a modern take on this with a slutty goth crew breaking it into an old derelict villa, doing their recreation of the night with more gore, sex, and body horror. And that would have been a stronger story. Once again, Sean Conn, you should be writing some screenplays. Go do that.
I would see this. I would
like,
see this
movie.
You should
try, like, write... Do your own version of the Gothic. I would read that screenplay and give you very constructive notes. I bet you Corey would too.
Just to remind listeners, or if you didn't listen to last week's episode, what Sean is referring to at the beginning is that I, in my memory, it was either him or me. I thought it was him that upon watching End of Days and seeing Gabriel Byrne light somebody on fire said, Gabriel, burn! just remind. Thank you so much for writing in, Sean Conn. And you too can have... You're a letter read.
Yeah.
And you should tell us what you want us to watch or what you enjoyed watching, what you didn't enjoy.
Yeah, please do that. This is making me very happy. Thank you, Sean Conn. So you can also not just write us by email at critclubpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at critclubpodcast and on Threads. I did actually post on Instagram this week. And so stay tuned for more postings. And now that brings us to what are we going to watch next week? And I believe it's a Corey movie. It's a Corey pick.
Yes.
What's it going to be?
So next week we're going to watch the 2001 Tom Green film, Freddy Got Fingered.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
We're going to watch, it's actually kind of serious. We're going to watch the 1974 American documentary film about the Vietnam War, Hearts and Minds by Peter
Davis. In which
Davis.
America gets fingered.
Yeah. And I don't know. I just saw this like talked about on the Criterion subreddit, and people basically just the sentiment was please watch Hearts and Minds. So it just looks like an interesting. It doesn't look like an easy watch, but that's what it's going to be. Hearts and Minds.
It's been a while since we've had a documentary. Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you, Corey. That sounds. I'm excited to see it. I did a whole. Chapter history of the Vietnam War in high school, and I think this was the one movie we didn't watch, so I'm kind of excited to see it, although it will probably depress the hell out of me, but that's okay. Right. I think after this film maybe we need a little more reality
or a unicorn chaser of some sort.
So
after this,
now that we know what we're watching next week, we're on to the last part of our show called Whatcha Watchin'? And I'm going reverse style because I want to know, Corey, what you been watching?
So we finished watching True Detective Night Country. We could have thoughts about that.
I've still only seen like 3 episodes.
I won't ruin anything. That whole thing is just a vibe. It's a vibe. Sure. I think that it's a pretty slow burn. I think the action really picks up in the last 2 episodes. A lot really happens. And at the end of the day, I don't know how you felt about it, Chris, but like the ending was better and better wrapped up than I thought it was going to be. So I don't know. I liked it. Chris, you want to weigh in?
Cool. Is that all you've been watching?
Well, no, because that got Frida onto a Jodie Foster kick.
I'll weigh in about True Detective after you.
All right. So that got freed onto a Jodie Foster kick. She's always loved Jodie Foster. Silence of the Lambs is one of her favorite movies, mine too. And so she has set out to watch every single Jodie Foster movie that has ever been made, which I believe is over 50 films.
Coming soon to a podcast near you.
Yeah,
right? It should. Seriously. Come on, Frida.
Yeah. I've been overhearing a lot of these movies, and there are so many movies from when Jodie Foster was a little kid about old dudes having sex with Jodie Foster. Like, yeah. That is a running theme in at least three movies that I've, like, eavesdropped on. Probably
the
more.
The 70s.
Yeah, a lot Yikes. Of the 70s movies about, like, old dudes Yikes. Banging little Jodie Foster. But we did watch the early 2000s movie Inside Man with Clive Owen and Jodie Foster. Oh, has anyone seen this?
I have not seen this.
It's like the heist movie?
Yeah. And yeah, it was a good heist movie. I was expecting... Definitely. I was expecting it to be garbage, and we watched it, and it was thoroughly entertaining.
I agree. It's like it's in the top 50 percentile of heist movies.
Yes, I agree.
But when are you guys going to watch Contact?
We're waiting because Noah has never seen Contact,
so good.
And I've seen it at least half a dozen times. I love Contact.
Yeah, same.
So we're going to just wait till like we have a bunch of people over and watch Contact. So probably next week.
Oh.
I love that movie.
I look forward to hearing all about it.
Right on. That's about it for me.
Nice. Wizard, what you been watching?
I have also capped off True Detective. I was a little bummed with the ending. I take issue with a mystery show that introduces a bunch of mysteries, and then at the end it's like, well, only two of those mysteries mattered, and like 10 of them don't matter at all. So don't worry about it. And then the show has like a character be like, some mysteries are just mysteries. I'm like, fuck you. How dare you?
You sound about as betrayed as I did about the Criterion Channel.
And I do not want to pile on. There's like this online pile on about True Detective season 4 that like even Nick Pizzolatto is kind of jumping on because men in Hollywood are sad, sad creatures. And I want to say that I still really enjoyed the show. I heard it's getting I heard that it's getting picked up for another season. I'm like, sure, I'll jump on for that. I just, I was worried that the show would fly headlong into a conclusion and leave all of these like unanswered questions. And that's what it did. And I'm kind of bummed
that
it did.
What's the pile on about?
That a woman created.
Yeah. It's classic wokeness stuff. It's anti woke bullshit. And like, you know, these Jodie Foster and these women of color stole Nick Pizzolatto's thing and made it bad, which is not what
true.
Happens. So there's that True Detective. That's fine. It's, you know, sometimes these things don't work out. I liked it too. I liked it too.
You also gave It's All About Love a 7.
That's
so we can't
weird.
Trust
just I also, on Monday, I went and saw Poor Things.
yes!
So I can jump onto the Crit Club Poor Things train. It is super fun. It's a super fun movie. Costumes are amazing. It has such a wonderful visual style. And it is such a like thoroughly bizarre and fun movie. Emma Stone's great. Fucking what's his face?
Mark Ruffalo
is doing some incredible fucking silly character acting. And like, I can't remember if it was on the show or if I read it in like a review of Poor Things or something like that, but it is super gratifying to see Mark Ruffalo do stuff that is not MCU related because he is like a talented dude and he was great in the movie. Everybody was great in it. It's super great. Yeah, definitely not for everybody. So if you're listening to this and you're like, should I see Poor Things? Maybe. It's long. The woman in front of me in the theater fell asleep in like the last like 45 minutes where it gets like really like quite fun.
Quite interesting.
It gets super fun. Strong recommend. Lots of fun. Go see Poor Things. it's a very long movie, and so there's only so much. Without going into a deep dive, I gotta say, you know, it was cool. It's cool, cool picture. Poor Things, True Detective. Yeah, playing some cyberpunk, loving my Street Samurai. Life is good. God damn. All right.
Aww, it's good to love hear you, that. Buddy. Aww, happy man. To hear that your life is good.
Seeing a wizard smile. Peter, what you been watching?
What have I been watching? I'll keep it short. I wanted to do a little bit of catch up because I realized I've been kind of watching some things over the past week or so. But most recently, I went to the theater twice this past week to watch both the animated and the live action Oscar nominated shorts.
Oh, cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I do that every year with the animated at least. It's always interesting. Like, it's always something that you kind of wouldn't expect. And it's always like, maybe you'll get like one that's pretty good and one that's like absolutely terrible that will invariably win. And I think that like it's sort of the same thing happened here. Like, I don't know. It felt like a more mixed bag this year, both with the live action and the animated, where there was like maybe one or two that I kind of thought were interesting. But a lot of them were kind of like, I don't know, enormous. A lot of them are usually quite heavy-handed. And I swear to God, I know exactly the animated one that's going to win. But that's always like, I always like enjoy that. I feel like those are those categories that you kind of don't know what's going on. And it's kind of like, you know, they sneak under the radar and don't have a lot of insight. And so I feel like you can go into it with some real fresh eyes. Let's see, what was my favorite of like the animated? Was like a really fascinating one called Wild Summon that kind of like tells about the salmon life cycle, but uses a really unique, I guess, way of depicting the salmon. And then live action, there was a Danish short that was called Night of Fortune that I thought was just, that just hit me. That just hit on all the right notes. There's also like a stupendously good French live action one that was called I'll look it up a bit, but like Angela, you would have absolutely loved it. It's called Invincible. Like honestly fascinating about was it French, maybe it was a Quebecois. Oh boy, sorry.
Or Belgium.
Sorry to both France and, well, because I remember seeing like Quebec or like I don't know, whatever. Regardless, so those were, but yeah, it's always fun. It's always fine. Glad to see it. Glad to have emotions, sometimes good, sometimes bad. All of this True Detective talk, I can't believe I didn't bring it up last week, but when I was traveling and I had to go to San Francisco for a hot second, I watched the most recent season of Fargo, which I feel like just kind of came and went and not a lot of people talked about. It's got Jon Hamm. It's got... Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, what's her name? The main character in it. I should have looked this up. I really enjoyed it.
I heard the new season's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was, like, kind of very good in this way that, like, if you're looking for some, I guess, offbeat television and True Detective's not sort of scratching that itch. Like, I think earlier this year, I guess in anticipation of the fourth season of Fargo, I rewatched all of the other Fargos, and still think that like season 2 and 3 are actually pretty fantastic. But like, yeah, season 5 is this newest one, and Juno Temple is like the main character. Oh. But it's just like, it's just good. It's like really, I think there are a lot of overt themes, a lot of heavy-handedness. I don't know. I just thought it was well structured. It's still Fargo in a lot of the ways, but I you know, if True Detective left you wanting, it's not the same thing. But the Fargo season 5 is like I found it to be pretty solid, surprisingly solid. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've heard that's good.
Yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. Yeah, I guess I'll just go with those two. Oh, lastly, It's All About Love is a 1.
Hey, there it is.
I've been thinking about it, and I think if Belladonna of Sadness was not on this list, it would be a 1. I agree with you, Corey, that it's not like that. I was looking at our spreadsheet, which listeners, you can look at too. It's in your show notes. I forgot to say that when we were rating them, but you can see all of the ratings and all the movies we watched on that spreadsheet in your show notes. But looking at my list, the last one I gave this low to was Equinox, was that sort of stop motion, black and white 1970 monster movie. I give it a 3, and it's like, it's all about love isn't one worse than Equinox. Like, Equinox had like, and it like had some craft. Like, those were stop motion-y things.
Some
and
craft.
Some like weird spirit. No, it's all about love is a 1. And so if you all will permit me, I'm going to change my score.
There are no shenanigans here.
And I have another fail. So, yes, thank you all for that.
All right. Well, I've been watching something. I went to see...
Oh, yes, Angela. Sorry. What have you been watching?
I went to the movie theater again. That's been my resolution this year. And I go to the theater every week now with my friend Eric. And we saw Perfect Days, the new Wim Wenders movie in Japan about a man who cleans toilets. And Corey will hate this movie because it is totally a slice of life. It is gentle and nuanced, but I like, you know, guys, you all remember, how do I rate movies as a crit? You're not a goon. You just don't like slice of life.
They make
movies.
You cry.
They make me cry.
It's got to make you weep. Cry.
They make you feel good about life.
Yes. Make me feel like I cry bittersweet tears that remind me just how beautiful life is. And like, it's been a long time since I've really gone, like, I was sobbing with happiness at the end of this movie. Perfect Days. I keep thinking about it over and over again every time I see it. Like, just everything is intentional and nuanced here, but like, the storytelling is strong. You the guy barely says a word, but he doesn't have to, because everything he does is also a reflection, meant to be a reflection of the Japanese culture. It's just about a man cleaning toilets, which sounds really boring, but Wim Wenders, his deft use of cinematography and sound, and, you know, this film kind of creates a rhythm of this man's day after day. And at some point his routine changes and you have to see some of the responses to that or reactions to it. Peter, I really hope you see this movie, because like, I feel like you and I both like these nuanced, quieter films, and I just feel like it's...
Yeah, we're not goons.
We're not goons. and I feel like it's going to hit you in the gut, and I really can't wait to hear what you have to say about it. I kind of want to see it again, but I also don't want to ruin that first time. Whereas like with Poor Things, which I've seen 4 times in the theater... and at some point I do want to see it a 5th time, because that Mark Ruffalo performance, it's a new iconic classic that, you know, for the next 50 years, we're going to look at Rakes through that lens. And his performance kind of echoes some of the classic cinema performances. And I can't remember his name, but it's because I'm thinking
Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Wither the Rakes.
Yes. You know, the mustache, the top hat, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw Perfect Days, and then I think that's it for me. Tonight I am seeing the new Coen brother movie, whose name I have forgotten 5 times today. The Drive Dolls Away or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that tonight. So you can look forward to me talking about that next week.
Ooh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Did anyone else watch The Curse?
No.
I live the curse.
I would like
everyone.
To. Yeah, it looks good. I love my boy Nathan Fielder.
We finished watching that.
I know I'm going to enjoy it.
So I'll wait till someone else watches it before I say anything about it.
Did you enjoy it, though?
I
enjoy being
enjoy
a
is a hard word.
Show, I think. Yeah.
It's a hard show to watch. And that last episode is a doozy. So
great.
Look forward to talking
to
someone.
That's a good prompt for me. Yeah, I will watch it soon.
Well, that sums up our show for this week, and hopefully we'll see you all next week when we watch... What are we watching, Corey?
Hearts and Minds.
Woo. So, see you then. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for this great time talking.
Whoa, we had such a time. Thanks for listening.
All right. Bye.
Bye.